It is 3:06 on Friday afternoon. We're coming to you live from the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting, broadcasting to our stations around the state of Georgia. I'm Bill Nigut. This is Political Rewind. Jim Galloway is with me as well. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Good. Wonderful day outside, isn't
it? Yeah, it's a beautiful day. And you know what makes the day even more beautiful, Jim? We have sitting with us in the studio, as you well know, Senator Johnny Isaacson, senior senator from the state of Georgia. Senator Isaacson, it's a real pleasure to have you here. We appreciate your taking some time to talk with us today.
It's great to be with two old friends. You and Jim are both great friends of mine, and I appreciate the opportunity.
We want to tell our listeners, of course, that you're on the ballot on November 8th, running for your third term in the United States Senate. Real quick, how do you think the campaign is shaping up?
Well, you know, until the last vote's counted, you never take anything for granted, but we've gotten everything accomplished that we set out to do November 2 years ago. We've raised a good bit of money. We have a great organization. I'm traveling the state when I'm not in Washington, so we are cautiously optimistic.
Okay. Senator, let me start by asking you this. The most recent action that you took before coming back for what is now a break through Election Day is you voted for a measure to extend the budget through what, December 8th, I think, is the date.
Ninth.
Okay. And you were one of the many, the majority, obviously, Democrats and Republicans, who voted in favor of extending the deadlines on the budget. But on December 9th, you're going to have to do it again. And then even probably more significantly, next spring, you're going to have to vote, assuming that you win re-election, on the debt ceiling and raising the debt ceiling. And given the partisan gridlock in Washington right now, are we in for an endless stream of impasses over budgets, over debt ceilings? How do we get out of this?
Well, first of all, let's cover one thing. CRs are not the way to run a country. Neither are omnibus
continuing resolutions.
They're not the way to run the country. But shutting down the government is obviously not the way to solve the problem. Had we shut down the government yesterday by not having enough votes to pass the CR, interest rates would have gone up, Social Security checks would have stopped, and nothing would have happened. That's not a good solution. What we need to do is get back to the good old-fashioned legislating, having appropriation bills individually come to the floor, debate them, amend them, and have the will of the people be carried out on the floor of the Senate and the floor of the House.
It feels as if anything that would bring a measure to the floor of the Senate and the House, of course, just gets caught in this endless partisanship that we see nothing getting accomplished. Is there hope of overcoming this?
I remind everybody of the 2 years that Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich balanced the budget and had a surplus. Republicans ran the House of Representatives. Bill Clinton was the president running the country. They came together. They had a balanced budget, no deficits, and we lowered the debt. That's the way to do things.
Jim?
Well, actually, that's a very good topic to pursue a little bit here. I mean, when Barack Obama came into office in 2009, there was, on the House Republican side, there was a concerted effort to block every single thing that he passed. Not so much on the Senate, although I think that was a communicable disease there. Will we have a kind of rapprochement between Republicans and Democrats? Is there any kind of effort like that underway to defuse this situation?
I'm not real sure I know what a rapprochement is, so I'm not going to affirm
an effort to bring people together.
It doesn't sound
good,
if I can say that. I think there'll be, I've told a lot of people this. I've told everybody that'll ask me. I think the next 2 years are going to be exciting, regardless who elects the president, because we have problems that we can't put off solving anymore. Budgeting and appropriating is one. The tax code is another. And having a definitive policy on ISIL in the Middle East rather than just containing them but eradicating them, that's going to dominate the first 2 years of the next president's term.
Senator, Barack Obama has taken an awful lot of criticism from Republicans for not engaging ISIS, in the way that many people feel he should. Do you share the concern that the administration is not prosecuting the war against terrorism in a good way?
I do, and I've been outspoken about it on Fox 2 years ago when I was a guest in Washington, in New York, at New York City on their station. I told them, I said, listen, it's time we engaged them on the ground. We ought to be the leader of a coalition of the willing to go in and root them out. Containment doesn't work. A lot of the administration will tell you, well, you have collateral damage when you put boots on the ground. What do they call 9/11/2001? That was 3,000 Americans in New York, all collateral damage when the bombings took place and the planes hit the towers.
Do you think the people of Georgia and around the country would be supportive if American troops, along with those of other countries, went back in to, say, went into Iraq again, Syria again, to root out ISIS?
I haven't said anything to you on this show in the last 5 minutes. I haven't said all over the state for the last 5 years. And people will come in and they say, if we have a coalition of the willing, if we have the rules of engagement pull back so they can actually go in and get them, absolutely do so. And use other Middle Eastern countries as well. And I have ambassadors from the other Middle Eastern countries come into my office and say, Mr. Isaacson, if America will lead, we will follow.
Hey, Johnny, let me ask you this. Now we've got you face Democrat Jim Barksdale and Libertarian Alan Buckley, and we'll have those two gentlemen on the show later on this month, in October. But Barksdale has been coming at you pretty hard for what he calls bad trade deals. And of course, and that picks up a little bit of what Donald Trump has been talking about. You've got a situation building right now. Obama has put us on notice that he's going to pursue TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, after November 8th. That's a big trade deal. Where are you on that?
Well, first of all, Mitch McConnell has said as majority leader in the Senate that it's not coming to the floor in the lame duck, and both presidential candidates have said they don't want it on the floor, so I don't think it's going to happen in December, but I think it's inevitable that it come to the floor. It should be come to the floor, and it should be debated because it's the greatest way to contain China you can possibly do, and that's an important thing for us to do, so I think it should. But let me be quite clear. I'm glad we get 300,000 jobs a year in Georgia from the Port of Savannah. I'm glad that all the automobiles that come in America on the East Coast come into the Port of Brunswick. I'm delighted that we're a great net exporter from our ports, and the Port of Savannah is a profitable port. I'm very glad that 65,000 metric tons of Georgia poultry are going into South Africa this year because of the trade deal we negotiated last year, and I could go on and on. I'm for jobs, I'm for opportunity, and I'm for Georgia, and good trade and fair trade and enforceable trade is the way to go.
Does it dismay? Go ahead, Jim.
Go ahead. No, please, Bill.
Does it dismay you then that your candidate for president has built a campaign largely around ending trade deals like NAFTA and not approving TPP?
I learned a long time ago not to get dismayed by candidates in races I'm not running in. I only get dismayed by those in my race. So I don't let the other races affect me one way or another.
Well, but presumably, should Donald Trump win, he is going to, he says he's going to undo NAFTA. He says he wouldn't pursue TPP. Is it good for the state if that should happen?
I believe the trade agreements that we have done and being in the WTO and being able to enforce our rights with China and the WTO and other trade partners is good for America and good for Georgia.
Okay. Jim Galloway from the AJC, his column in the Thursday and Sunday paper, and of course you read what he oversees at Political Insider, the Insider blog at AJC.com. And Johnny Isaacson, thrilled to have you here on a fundraising day.
Great to be. Fundraising is a political pastime, you know that.
I want to give Jim a chance, but before I do, I think it's important. How are you? Tell us about your health, because you announced very openly a year ago, basically a little less perhaps, that you're dealing with Parkinson's disease. How is that? How are you doing with that? I think a lot of people will want to know.
Well, it was 15 months ago, and it's okay. Probably one of the hardest things I ever did personally, but it's something I felt like I owed to the voters to let them know, because your health is an issue and you ought to let them know how you're doing. You've been with me for an hour today. Jim's seen me around Georgia. I think I'm acquitting myself well. I feel like I've have an obligation to everybody in Georgia that has a disability to be an example of what you can do in dealing with disabilities, and I'm doing that with my Parkinson's.
And you're managing it pretty well at this point.
To anybody who's listening that has Parkinson's, just get LSTV Big, which is the newest physical therapy, which does wonders for you, and that's what I'm doing every single day.
Jim?
Your medical care is still coming out of Kennistone and Marietta?
Kennistone and Marietta.
All right. Shout out to the home folks.
They just fixed your neck, Senator, as a matter of fact.
That's right. Senator, let me ask you, one of the most curious things that I heard that came out of that debate, that presidential debate on last Monday, was a statement from Hillary Clinton, not made to Donald Trump, but basically to other countries around the world, trying to reassure them that the, you know, despite what they're hearing in this campaign, the U.S. intends to keep its word when it comes to international agreements. You used to be on the Foreign Affairs Committee. I know you're not there any longer.
No, I still am there.
But you still are? Okay, yes. Good. All right. What are you hearing from outside the U.S. about these kinds of concerns, about these Donald Trump wanting to put a price on NATO enforcement, nuclear weapons in East Asia?
Well, let me answer the way you ask it. I'm not hearing much at all from foreign ambassadors coming to my office about Donald Trump as a general statement. I hear a lot about the NATO situation. I'm a supporter of NATO. NATO has proved a great asset to our country. We need to have a presence. We also need to have a presence where we can enforce Article 5. You know, when Crimea was invaded by the Russians and later the Ukraine under Article 5, we really should have physically gone into their aid. We didn't because we're stretched too thin. But NATO's an important part of our national defense and our in defense of our own country.
Senator,
would you be in favor of seeing an increase in conventional troops? U.S. ground troops in that area?
I tell you one thing that I think Donald Trump has called for, and I think Hillary Clinton's called for it too, so I'm not going to try and play one against the other. We need other countries in NATO matching what the United States is doing in terms of a percentage of contribution and effort and manpower and money. Far too often in world organizations or regional organizations like NATO or like the UN, the United States puts a disproportionate amount of money in there, and that's not right. I think our taxpayers want us to reduce that commitment and have more put in by those who participate with us.
Senator, after the 2012 Mitt Romney loss, as you well know, the Republican National Committee did a so-called autopsy, what we need to do to secure more votes and win a presidential election. We've got to reach out to the black community, to Hispanics. We have to have more women in the fold. And of course, Donald Trump, at least at this point, it appears through the polling, has done none of that, including today. He's on the hot seat because of these tweets again about Miss Universe. He's called her disgusting again today. It conjures up all of the language he's used in the past about women. I know you're uncomfortable talking about him, but is he... I've watched you for 30-plus years. You do not treat people the way he seems to. Doesn't it worry you a little to see the way he behaves?
I don't tolerate anybody that has that kind of behavior, regardless of their political party or their position. I think we need to respect everyone for whom they are. When I'm on the campaign trail and I see somebody in a skirt, somebody with an African-American, somebody who speaks Spanish, I treat them as a Georgian and an American, not as Hispanic, not as a woman, or not as a man, but I treat everybody equally.
And so does it worry you that you've got a presidential candidate who does not seem to share that view of yours?
Let me give you the political answer to that. You're never going to win a national election with just old white men voting for you. You've got to appeal to the cross-section and the diversity of our country, our ethnicity-wise, race-wise, religion-wise, and occupation-wise, and lack of occupation-wise. You've got to be a president or a representative of all the country, and that means you've got to represent all the people.
Does that mean that you worry that Trump won't win this election?
Well, if you narrow your chances to get votes, you're narrowing your opportunity to win.
Jim?
I got to ask this.
Yeah?
Senator, have you got a Twitter handle? Do you tweet?
I have a designated Twitter. I have a designated tweeter.
Oh, okay. All right.
I beep some. My wife claims that I beep sometimes, but I have a designated tweeter.
What do you think about the possibility of a commander-in-chief sitting in the White House at 3 in the morning, as Trump was today in Trump Towers, just picking up his phone and tweeting out kind of ill-considered messages?
I don't tweet at 3:30 in the morning.
No, but he does.
And I don't think he should either. Anything happening at 3:30 in the morning can't be good, whether you're on the streets or you're in bed.
You know, Lynn Westmoreland gives a lecture to incoming House Republicans every other year. And the first thing he tells them is nothing good happens in D.C. after 10 p.m.
Senator, if Hillary Clinton wins the White House in November, do you expect there will be the same intransigence among Republicans on Capitol Hill that we saw with Barack Obama for 8 years? Do you think there's a chance that Republicans might be willing to reach out and work a little more amicably to try to accomplish some of the things that need to be done?
I don't think it'll be like the post-Obama election at all. In fact, the one thing you have to remember is for 5 years she was Secretary of State while we were in the Senate. We had to work together an awful lot as members of the Foreign Relations Committee, but also as members of the Senate Armed Services Committee. So I don't think it'll be the same. Barack Obama was somewhat of an unknown. He was a senator, but only for a year and a half before he was elected president. She is a known commodity, and I think there'll be a more camaraderie in terms of attitudes toward working together than there might have been in the early days of Obama.
Jim, you got a chance for one last question here.
Well, okay, here. Among your Republican friends, have you gotten any kickback for all this support that you're getting from Democrats like Roy Barnes?
No, I'm very proud of the support I'm getting. I've seen some dismay, but I tell you what, friends are friends, regardless of what their race, creed, color, or national origin are, and Roy Barnes is one of the finest people I've ever known. He was a great governor of Georgia, and we raised our families together and served in the legislature together. I appreciate his support and that of many others.
Got a chance for a very quick question. Are you going to vote for Donald Trump on November 8th?
I'm going to support the ticket, as I've said since the convention. He's the head of the ticket, so I'll be voting for him.
Okay. We're going to have to go to a pledge break, but you said to me when we were in the last break that you wouldn't mind saying a word or two.
I'm going to end this segment by saying the following. NPR is a great program. 88.5 is what I wake up to every morning in my bedroom on my Bose sound system. My message to all of you is this. I approve this message. My name is Johnny Isaacs in the United States Senate.
We're going to do something a little different on the show right now. I'm going to play you a story that we put together for you. A couple of weeks ago, my wife and I went to Paris and London. We wanted to get away for 10 days. And while we were in Paris, Janice Schaefer, my wife, discovered an American named Jim Haynes, who every Sunday night at his apartment in Paris throws the doors open and invites people who don't know him to come to dinner at his house. And there are Brits, there are Americans, there are Parisians, a great number of people who come to have an opportunity for fellowship, to get to know each other. And I thought I should take a recorder along with me and I should ask people how they're feeling about the presidential race. Here's what we got. On this warm summer evening in Paris, some 60 people are sipping wine and talking in the courtyard of American Jim Haynes' apartment while a French friend strums his guitar. La 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 la.
La la la. Asha Clark and Elena. Welcome. Where are you two from?
We're from England, South England, near London.
Jim sits on a stool greeting guests near the kitchen, where steam rises from great vats of food cooking on the stove.
How long have you been doing this for?
Dinner? Yeah. 37 years.
37 years, every week?
175,000 people have been to dinner.
On this night, a number of American and British tourists, a handful of Jim's Parisian friends, a few Norwegians, and others have found their way to the supper club. Jim tells me he doesn't think I'll find many Trump supporters tonight.
Most of the people who come here travel. People who travel for Clinton, they're sophisticated, and they want to deal with the world. They want to be involved in the world.
As if to prove his point, he introduces me to an Australian friend who's just walked in.
Bill, David, David, Bill.
Hello, David.
Australian. How do you feel about the American presidential election?
Oh, I don't want to even think about it.
Why not?
It's too horrible to imagine that the worst.
Because of Donald Trump? Or?
Obviously, yeah.
Where do you live?
In Paris. I live in Montmartre. I'm from London, but
right.
We study French at university.
Okay.
So we have to do like a year abroad.
Hannah Thomas is sitting with her friend Olivia Sterry at a table in the courtyard. They both have a lot to say about the election.
Do you think both Clinton and Trump would make good presidents?
I think Clinton will be better than Trump.
I mean, it scares me the fact that the Senate's Republican as well,
yeah.
So things will happen. That's the scary thing. People say, oh, once he gets in power, he'll calm down. For him, power is everything, so it clearly won't.
But like, he's literally a joke. Like, I don't... Like, he's not, like...
The things he says.
Like, I thought it was a joke when he was like, I want to be president. And now he could actually be president.
I think it's very difficult for the American people. Donald Trump is a very particular man.
Jim's neighbor is forensic psychiatrist Ariane Casanova.
When I hear Donald Trump say that he wants to build a wall in America against the other people, it's for me very hard to hear that.
My name is David Francis Arini, native of Boston, but I live in Paris. I vote, what the French say, procuration. absentee ballots.
What are your friends here saying about what they're seeing in the Trump-Clinton race?
They view the whole Trump phenomenon as a manifestation of American, let's say, gargantuism, vulgarity, the kind of spirit of Las Vegas. And they have an impression that they would take a part for the whole, that they think because Trump has attained a certain popularity in the United States, that means that he has the approbation of everybody, which is not true, which is not true.
So what do you think people are saying about Clinton around you?
Well, I find that French people, they don't necessarily reason from facts. They have preconceived ideas, and they're very unwilling to change them in light of new evidence. So they always like Bill Clinton. And one of the reasons is that they could take what happened to Bill Clinton with the sexual scandal as an example of American puritanism, to which they themselves feel superior. So they like Hillary because she reflects Bill Clinton, whom they did like very much.
Hovering in the kitchen waiting for dinner to be served, British expat Martin Walker tells me about the novels he writes in his home in the south of France.
It's about a French country policeman called Bruno, and he's a great cook, and he's a hunter, and there's a lot of food, and French food, and foie gras, and truffles, and wine.
Turns out Walker sells millions of his books about Bruno, but tonight he wants to talk about the similarities he sees in the politics of America and Europe.
I think it's an amazingly international phenomenon, because what we're seeing with Trump is what we saw in the British referendum with Brexit. We're seeing it with Le Pen in France. We're seeing it now in Germany with the AfD. We're seeing it in Hungary, in Austria. There is a wave of populism, of dissatisfaction with conventional political parties and structures. And I would not exclude that Trump could pull this off.
What do you think that's all about, this extreme nationalism, this fear of the other?
Well, I think three things came together. First of all, crucially, was the crisis of 2008, which didn't just make a lot of people lose their homes and lose their jobs. It really undermined a lot of people's faith in their institutions and their political systems. Second point was the extraordinary shock that we've had in mass migration. And it's been building up for many, many years, but we've not talked about it, really. It's been incorrect to talk about it. And the third thing that's happened, I think, has been the realization that ISIS and this new Islamic terrorism is something very different, very smart, and particularly in France, has shocked people to an extraordinary extent. So these factors come together and have created a kind of a perfect storm.
But when I'm not prompting the conversation, people aren't talking about politics. They're here to enjoy the company of strangers, a rare chance to meet people from across the globe and find out what we all have in common instead of what divides us. It is, after all, what Jim Haynes' Sunday Supper Club is all about.
There's a bar outside and a bar inside. Help yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you for letting me record that. What's your name?
Robbie.
Robbie.
Thank you.
I love the way they talk, don't you? My thanks to Jenny Ament and to Trevor Young, our great producers, for their help in putting that story together. Jim Galloway, you told me you knew all about Martin Walker. He's a big star, and I didn't realize it.
Oh, absolutely. But I got to say, I was more impressed with you finding a forensic psychiatrist.
I'll tell you,
in Paris.
That's the thing about Jim Haynes' dinners. Look, Jim, there's a lot we can talk about in the few minutes we have left, but it does seem to me we ought to very quickly sort of reassess the Johnny Isaacson interview. He is very reluctant to say anything positive about Donald Trump, but he's being a good soldier to the extent that he says he'll vote for him.
Right. He's being the good soldier. But I thought it was very, very interesting that he began describing a relationship between Congress and a president, Hillary Clinton. That was highly, you know, it's interesting. Before this contest started, before the presidential contest started, both Isaacson and Saxby Chambliss were actually very, very generous in their praise of Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State.
Yeah, and of course, Isaacson did have a working relationship with her, because Isaacson has always been a guy in the U.S. Senate who's found a way to work
not only across party lines, but across ideological lines within his own party. That's been one of his strengths. It's also one of the things that sometimes makes people who are very conservative in this state have doubts about him.
Right. He's had to pay a penalty for that on many occasions. This general election doesn't seem to be one of those.
Yeah, he looks like it, earlier on it looked like he might not be able to break the 50% threshold. Right now, things are moving forward. We'll see. By the way, we should point out we are inviting Jim Barksdale to be on the show, the Democrat. We'll also have the Libertarian candidate. But you should know that on Monday morning, On Second Thought is going to have an interview with Jim Barksdale at 9 a.m. Jim, we're seeing an interesting thing happen across the country. Newspapers are in the middle of making their endorsements right now. Today, USA did something they have never done. They've never endorsed a candidate for president. Today, they said there's no way Donald Trump should be president. They endorsed Hillary Clinton.
Well, they didn't endorse.
I'm sorry. You're right.
They called Trump unfit.
That's right. I thank you for correcting me. The Chicago Tribune today endorsed Libertarian Gary Johnson. There too, a Republican newspaper that is pretty much always lined up.
Yeah, it was that foreign policy expertise, no doubt, that Gary Johnson has shown. But we've got the Arizona Republic,
yeah,
which was established in 1873, never endorsed a Democrat. It's endorsed Hillary Clinton. The Detroit News, which has, I think,
always.
Maybe a... Yeah. 140-year-old
yep.
streak going.
Yep. Yep.
It has endorsed Hillary Clinton.
No. The Detroit News endorsed Gary Johnson.
Oh, did they? Okay,
yeah.
All right.
They
all
endorsed
right.
Gary Johnson. So here's what I want to ask you about that. It looks like the trend is going to be that Trump is not going to get any major city, or not many major city newspapers. But the question is, in this era of tweeting, of Facebook, of all the other social media channels out there, do newspaper endorsements matter the way they once did?
Not the way they once did, but they still matter. I think people, a majority of Americans no longer get their news from print journalism. I mean, that's simply a fact. It's the reverberations of print journalism and print writing that matter. For instance, with that USA Today editorial, you're going to see that in ad after ad by the Clinton campaign. It's going to have quotes, unfit for office, close quotes. Says USA Today, much like your movie reviews are going to say smashing or amazing.
Right. And what do we think today, given that there have been these newspapers coming out not going with their traditions of either endorsing a Republican or not endorsing at all, what do we think that Trump's overnight Twitter flurry, waking up at 3 a.m. apparently to attack Alicia Machado, the Miss Universe, who has become somehow the center of the campaign. He's doubled down again. And once again, whether you think he's going to appeal to women or not, there are some women out there saying, no, we still think he's great. But doesn't this raise these new questions about his temperament and whether he's suitable for the office?
And how easy it is to manipulate him. I mean, this was a trap. We talked about this on Tuesday, I think.
Yep.
Did we not?
Yep.
This was the last 5 minutes of the debate. Hillary set this trap by naming this Venezuelan beauty queen. And what are we talking about now? What was Donald Trump talking about at 5 a.m. this morning? He was talking about that Venezuelan beauty queen.
Yeah.
It's very much like the Khazid situation that happened in Philadelphia.
Khazir Khan, right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we also are hearing now that there's a tremendous infighting in the Trump campaign. The Kellyanne Conway's been out there trying to explain away some of the statements he's been making. She's been getting a harder time than she's ever had, I think, in the interviews she's done. And we're seeing all these unnamed sources who are coming forward and saying Trump handled the debate poorly. You know, Jim, you and I have learned a lesson over the many years we've covered politics. when a consultant or a staffer for a campaign in the weeks before an election calls you up and quietly whispers in your ear, you know, I would have done it differently if it hadn't been. You know, that's
this
the first sign they think
fault.
They're going to lose.
That's right. That's right. They're trying to protect the resume there. And that's what we have. And I will tell you what happened was, I mean, after the convention, we had Hillary Clinton building that lead and Republicans worrying that the gap was closing and Republicans were getting a little bit more assured, not necessarily because Donald Trump was going to win in November, but because any increase in that national polling kind of puts in jeopardy the majority in the U.S. Senate.
Right, right. All right.
And that's what's threatened right now.
All right. Jim Galloway, we've got to call an end to our conversation today. Thanks so much for being with us. It's been another fascinating week in politics. So we'll see you again next week. We will leave you now. We'll send you back to Tanya and Bert Wesley Huffman. In the meantime, try to join us tomorrow or Sunday, tomorrow at 4 and Sunday at 11, for Two-Way Street. We have a great conversation with one of our very favorite guests, crime novelist Carl Hiaasen, who has a brand new wacky novel about the crazy things that happened in South Florida. You might want to listen to that. It's a lot of fun. That's it for Political Rewind.